welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton, pleased to be joined, as always, by Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello and welcome, Ed.
Thank you, Jennifer. Always wonderful to see you.
I'm very glad to see you. You know, I was thinking...
You're one of the few people, by the way, that would utter that sentence, and I think maybe mean it. To be clear. Thank you.
It's always fun when we tape our podcast episodes. And one of the things I always really look forward to, I love the puzzlers.
Wait, you mean we're not doing these live? Wait a second.
Well, you may be showing up at 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoons at KUT. I'm not there.
I wondered where you were supposed to be. All right, we're taped.
One of the things that I really look forward
to. Taped live, by the way.
Right, taped live.
In front of a live studio audience.
Yes, there they are. One of the things I really look forward to, I love the puzzlers.
Thank you.
And, you know, they're challenging. They do really make me think and exercise my brain. And what I've noticed happens a lot is I will have an answer that's sort of my gut response. It's like my first reaction. And I think, yeah, I know that. You know, my intuition says this. And then when we go through the solution to the puzzler in the following episode, we kind of reason through it and you explain the answer. And often I realize, oh, that gut response I had, that kind of intuition was not correct. It wasn't the correct solution. And it's interesting to me, because then I start wondering, well, can I trust my gut? I mean, should I just always stop and think it through? Because people will say, you know, trust your intuition, go with your gut. If I went with my gut on these puzzlers, I'd be batting zero.
It's interesting. Well, first of all, you know, the one element of that, before I talk about and react to what you're really sharing, that when they are not quite right or when they are wrong, remember, I have to focus on that that's a moment of celebration.
Right.
And that, you know, that's an example of effective failure if you have that following epiphany that goes after that.
Yeah, because it often propels us down the road. It's like a step or two down the road, and then we say, oh, but this, and then we're there.
And a step or two down the road is often best choreographed by effective failure. So that's just one thing. But the idea of kind of your intuition and gut and where does that fit into the framework of trying to understand things and trying to build your belief system and your philosophies, I think it's very important. I think that throwing out kind of, well, here's like what I call it. Here's my phrase. I use the knee-jerk reaction. My knee-jerk reaction is this. So if you ask me a question and I feel comfortable with you, I will share what I refer to as my knee-jerk reaction. And that basically has given me carte blanche to say, this is not going to be right. I'm not saying this is even what I believe or what I think, but my first thinking is this. And to be able to articulate that, even internally, even if you don't want to externally share that, I think is important because it gives you something to build on. It gives you a foundation, which you might dissolve and reconstruct, but at least it gives you something. One of the things that we talk about exercises in the book, The Five Elements of Effective Thinking, is an exercise called Don't Stare at a Blank Screen, which means if you have to write a paper or metaphorically or write a report or just metaphorically do anything, instead of just staring at that, you know, a Word document and you're sitting there at the keyboard and you don't want to type that first word because it might not be quite perfect, our exercise is write a really bad first draft fast. So write it as fast as you can, or metaphorically resolve the issue or solve the problem or deal with the circumstance as fast as you can and as bad as you can. But now you have something to respond to. What's good in this? What's bad in this? Why is it bad? And so having that intuition and that gut is exactly the place to start. My concern is that in a world where everything moves at the speed of light because of technology and our smart devices, and we are led as a society by sound bites and by tweets that are 140 characters at a time. And by the way, I'm on Twitter. By the way, all of our listeners should follow both of us.
Yes.
We're both on Twitter. If they don't follow me or you, they're in trouble. But that's our society. And a lot of times the thinking or the conversation ends with the intuition and gut. And I actually personally and professionally have some difficulties with that. If it's only going to be our initial knee-jerk reaction, if it's only going to be our intuition and gut, if it's only going to be our feeling, and we don't then use that to go deeper and to start to think about the issue, whether it's emotionally, logically, with the heart, with the soul. I mean, depending what the issue is. But if we then don't go deep, then we are actually missing an opportunity. And then the conversation, the national conversation, becomes very shallow. And you see this in political venues, you know, election years and so forth. Sometimes it all comes down to sound bites rather, and then your gut. My gut tells me to vote for that person, or my gut tells me that I should support that issue. Where really, where is that deep contemplation? Where's the tenacity? Where is the uncomfortable learning? Where people are going out of their comfort zone and exploring things from different vantage points. Where's the doubt? We should, one episode should be about doubt.
Doubt, where, yes, that's on our list.
Where is the doubt? And where is that progression? Where do we make that progress? And that's, if that's missing, I'm not saying it always is, although it is missing in a lot of the national discourse in this country. But when that's missing, I think we're missing an opportunity.
So there's nothing wrong with having that gut intuition sort of, aha, oh wait, I think it's this. But if I'm understanding you, what you're saying is just make sure you characterize it as that and don't stop there.
Correct. And by the way, at the end of the day, and I'm talking about some, you know, really charged issues. I mean, not just an intellectual, like, you know, calculus or a puzzler, right? Who cares about a puzzler? But, you know, what, figuring out what you believe, figuring out what you value, figuring out kind of your philosophy. You might end up, after this kind of tenacity and doubt and looking at things from different perspectives and directions, you might come out and say, yeah, my gut is actually right for me. And that's fine, too. I'm not suggesting that your gut is going to always be wrong, as it is you claim with your puzzlers. But what I am suggesting is that if you don't take that requisite continuation of that intellectual, thoughtful journey, then you might be missing something.
Isn't there also a danger, though, in skipping over that gut reaction and going straight to the, I'm just going to use my brain and sort this out very matter-of-factly? I mean, doesn't it make some sense to bring in heart, gut, feeling, intuition, whatever you want to call it, and kind of add it to the mix? I mean, don't we miss something if all we do is go for the...
Correct.
Kind of go for the brain part only.
Absolutely. And here I'll speak like a mathematician and say that the human element, the human component, not just being a machine, a mechanical device, I think is crucial, because through that gut, through that intuition, through that feeling, we generate new ideas, we generate creativity, we generate innovation, and we generate insights that we might not get if we were just looking at it from a kind of a totally, and I don't mean that the thinking has to always be logical thinking. It could be all sorts of, you know, ways to think and ways to analyze. But to me, the human element provides a dimension where creativity can really flourish. And even in the world of mathematics, you always start with a gut intuition, and then you prove yourself wrong 99% of the time, and that leads to an insight that might lead to a theorem.
So how on earth do you teach students, teach people, lifelong learners, anybody, how do you teach them to marry that kind of gut intuition, initial reaction, with the kind of more in-depth analysis and thought and contemplation about something with your brain and using facts and data? How do you teach somebody how to do that?
Well, you have to do it with intentionality. If you're going to hope that it happens just organically, naturally, through the context of the material and through the discussion and so forth, then you're missing an opportunity. It's got to be front and center. We spoke last week about a course I am teaching that I created, where there's essentially no content. It's all about the mind. It's all about these practices of thinking and creativity and imagination and going from intuition and gut to reason, intellect, and true wisdom. You have to suggest that to the students, and then you have to model that for the students. And so that means that it's important for we as instructors to offer different ways of thinking. Our brains all work in a certain way. But when we are modeling that for other people, we have to offer other mindsets, other perspectives, other vantage points, other philosophies, other beliefs. I might have my own personal beliefs, but I need to make sure that my class really has the space and people feel safe in actually sharing whatever they may feel. Because if that student sitting over there might disagree philosophically with something that we're being discussed, or the teacher kind of mentions in class and shares his or her own beliefs, that might silence that student, and that's not great. So the environment, you know, the instructor might share what he or she believes, which is fine, as long as it's within a context of everything is kind of open and on the table, and we might not always agree, and that's part of the joy of living in this particular country, in living in a democracy. We don't have to agree, but as long as we have thoughtful, wise, and respectful debate and conversation, as long as we keep moving forward with that, then we are growing as an intellectual nation.
You know, I said that I often have a gut response to our puzzlers.
Yep.
The one from last week, I didn't have a sort
it's
of
a lot of numbers. You know, my mom, who, by the way, listens to us,
yes,
she loves you. She wants to meet you.
I would love to meet her.
Well, say hi to her right now. Her name is Florence.
Hi, Florence.
Oh, she's going to love that. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, with my mom, if there's lots of numbers, she can't, you know. And again, this is not a visual thing. If you saw the numbers, it might help.
Yeah.
Let me remind people what it was. It was an arithmetic thing.
Yes.
So three guys go in to share a room at a hotel. The hotel room costs $25. So they each give $10, each chip in $10. One of the guys is going to be now the kind of manager of all this. So they each chip in $10. They have $30. They give it to the desk clerk. The desk clerk gives them their $5 change in five singles. The little manager guy, one of the three, realizes this is not going to go well. So takes $2 and pockets it without the other people seeing. Then turns around and says, okay, guys. And these aren't the brightest bulbs in the firmament. Said, okay, we got $3 change. That's one for you, one for you, one for me. And so they each take the dollar. They all go away and everyone's happy. And the clerk is watching this and tries to think through this and says, now hold on a second. Let's see. Everyone first put in $10 and then each got a dollar back. So that's $9 each. There are three of them. Nine times three is $27. And then there was the $2 that one guy stuck in his pocket beforehand. That's $28.29. That's $29. But we started with $30. And so the puzzle was, where's the dollar? And you're not even going to throw anything out there. Do you want to say anything? I mean, are you bothered by this? I mean, if you don't want to answer the question, give us your feeling, your emotion.
So
does it bother you? Does it sound...
Well, so what I did was I tried to map it out. And literally, I have followed
it.
The dollars
yes.
and the pockets that they
follow
went
the
into.
Follow the money, as they say. Follow the money.
I followed the money, but this $1 does seem to get lost. But where I get caught up is they each put in 10, then they each get a dollar back. So that's 9. 9 times 3 is 27.
Right.
Then there are the $2. Doesn't the manager just have the extra dollar?
Well, no, because the manager was given 30 and gave back five singles.
Oh, I mean the band manager. So the head person representing the three who checked in, the guy mm-hmm. who was doing the money transacting, who skimmed money.
Well, how much money does that guy have? That guy has the $2 he skimmed
plus
the
dollar.
So that's only three. So that's just, they're all been accounted for because that's $9 he
yes.
put in. And then the two extra dollars.
So where's the dollar?
Right.
It fell on the ground.
Right. So this is an example where all the words are what's confusing.
Okay.
It's just an input and an output.
Yeah.
And what we're doing is we're mixing inputs and outputs.
Okay.
So here's the way to think about it. It's the adding the $2 to the 27 that's wrong.
Okay.
Mathematically.
Yes.
Because the $27, right, that is what they gave to the hotel.
Right.
And then what did the hotel do? The hotel actually did not have those extra $2. Those extra $2 came back. So if you take the $27 that the hotel had, you have to subtract the $2. Not
to
add
get
them,
to 25.
To get to 25. And that,
that's the
and
original
that's the right,
charge.
And that's the right amount.
Yes.
But if you just take that input and add it to an output, then you get this number 29, which is so close to 30, you go, hey, wait a minute, where's the dollar?
Uh-huh.
So it's just a total fake of you're adding when you really should be subtracting. It's 27 minus the $2, which is the $25 that the room cost,
mm-hmm.
not the $30 that they all started with.
Oh, and that's a clever one. I like that one.
Did you like
one.
That one?
I do.
Wow, because we're very negative on it when we started the
well,
solution, by
I think
the way.
I
felt the negativity
you felt the
in
negativity
your gut.
In my gut. I think I liked it because I thought it was going to be a numbers one, but it's not a numbers. It's a semantics and a word one, really. It's
right.
a language.
27, and he gave back two, and that's 25.
Yeah. I like that one.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you. You're so sweet. And I don't even know if you're sincere, but I just appreciate the fact that you made me feel welcome here in the studio today.
No, this was, I liked puzzling through this one.
And again, you can see the process. You have a feeling, you have a kind of an intuition, and the challenge for people who I'm trying to encourage, including our listening audience, to be effective thinkers and creative souls, are the ones that will then take that as a starting position and not be afraid to realize that that might be right or it might be wrong.
Well, and this is interesting, just our final couple of minutes here, because to me that this is an example of when it might make sense to override your gut or intuition. So in other words, if you came in and sat down and said, Jennifer, our puzzler for this episode, it's going to be all about math and numbers, and I might go, ew. Well, that math and numbers, I don't think that's going to be very fun. I don't like that. I don't want to do that one. And I get kind of negative about it.
Right.
But if I then go with that and let that be the overriding principle, I'm probably not going to like it because I'm going in with this attitude of, ugh, math. But what happened was it was really interesting and engaging and turned out to be very different than I thought. So I kind of had to get over.
Well, you bring up a really important, impactful point that might even be another episode for us to think about, which is that we are the ones that should be constructing our attitude toward whatever it is. And we should always be positive focused. So if someone says to you, I'm going to give you a math thing, and you're like, "Oy, math, I hate math." Well, it's up to you to say, you know what, I'm going to find something in this ugly math that I'm going to find intriguing. And now it's my job. I take ownership. I, with intentionality, will make this thing interesting, intriguing, thought-provoking, or joyful. And if you live your life that way, you will live a much happier and a much thought-provoking life.
Life lessons from Dr. Ed Berker, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. It always helps us keep our brains sharp each week. And you can find out more at southwestern.edu. You can also keep your brain sharp by checking out the news at KUT.org. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT News.